From Radio Catskills Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me. Coming up, we check in with Philip Pantuso of the Times Union for the latest news, including a big announcement involving the Catskills' famous Bearsville Center that includes the Bearsville Theater in Woodstock. We're also going to learn about the Hudson Highland Fjord Trail. And New York Governor Hochul rolled out her proposed executive budget for the state on Tuesday. Philip and I will spend a lot of time digging into its standout details and talking about some of their political implications. But first, along those lines, we start with news from the New York Public News Network's Albany Bureau. Governor Hochul has been focusing on affordability for New Yorkers as the state begins its budgeting process. One of the specific issues of affordability that she mentioned in both her State of the State and in her executive budget is auto insurance, and specifically what she calls auto insurance fraud. But another top New York State lawmaker sees controversy ahead over proposed new rules for auto insurance. WNYC's Jimmy Vielkind has more.
Governor Hochul wants to change how serious physical injury is defined for auto insurance. The Democratic governor says the definition is too vague and leads to excessive payouts and higher premiums. That puts her on a collision course with trial lawyers, a powerful lobbying group in the state. Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie says it could be a sticking point in budget negotiations.
You know, the governor's trying to deal with a problem, but I also know that we don't want to leave victims of accidents, without being, due compensated.
Trial lawyers say the current definitions are fine, and there's no evidence they raise cost. The state budget is due March 31st. In Albany, I'm Jimmy Vielkind for the New York Public News Network.
Thank you, Jimmy. Well, let's stay on Governor Hochul's proposals in New York. Earlier this afternoon, I spoke with Philip Pantuso, Times Union Hudson Valley, for the latest news, and we did start off spending a lot of time talking about Governor Hochul's executive budget. Philip, welcome back to the local edition.
Always good to be with you.
So let's get things started. Just this week, Governor Hochul laid out details of her budget. This is kind of the real start of the budgeting process, right?
Yeah, well, now we can kind of get into the nitty-gritty. Every year when the governor releases his or her, in this case, budget proposal, it essentially serves as a framework for negotiations with the legislature to settle on the state's official budget, which is, as listeners probably know, typically due by April 1, but seldom, if ever, in recent years, actually delivered by that date. The takeaway, I think, from we can talk about some of the main takeaways from Hochul's proposal. She unveiled it on Tuesday. It's about $260 billion in spending, which would amount to about a 0.7% increase over the current budget. And kind of the broad overarching thing to say about it is that her office said that the proposal represents improved financial condition for New York, five plus years after it was struggling with the pandemic-induced recession, that at that point, or at its ebb, had left the state's rainy day reserves at $2.5 billion. That number is now above $14 billion. Last year, the budget also reflected revenue projections that had been adjusted downward as a cautionary measure during the lengthy federal shutdown. That's according to State Budget Director Blake Washington. He told us that since then, there's been a few sort of improvements that have allowed them to, or that have made the revenue projections more rosy. These include a surge in high-tech investment, the stock market continuing to rally, yesterday notwithstanding, and consumer spending that has really rebounded since the nadir of the pandemic, certainly. You want to get into some of the kind of top line takeaways that are in the package?
Yeah, and I like pointing this out for the listener, but I love that at the Times Union, go to timesunion.com to look at the reporting on this. It's broken up into the categories, so we can look at the various different categories. But right at the top is the one that, I tend to keep an eye on when we get to this budgeting process, especially because it was such a it's a major issue in our area. You and I are always talking about it. It's housing. So what's the governor actually proposing for housing?
Yeah, so housing is back, you know, in the budget in a big way. She's Hochul during her presentation said that the state is now on track to meet a plan of creating 100,000 new homes. You know, that we're in the fifth year of a quite expensive plan to do that. The main sort of policy takeaways here are a couple. In September, the administration rolled out a new pilot program that will help build modular homes across the state, which can be built more quickly and cheaply than traditional site-built homes. And the governor would like to earmark $100 million for a new round of funding through the budget for that pilot program. The budget also commits some $250 million to accelerate the construction of affordable housing units, which is designed to take advantage of recent changes to the federal low-income housing tax credit. A portion of this has already been announced as part of that $25 billion plan to create and preserve 100,000 homes, which I just mentioned. Hochul says that, you know, like I said, we're on track to meet that goal. The state is also earmarking $5.7 billion in capital resources to fund new affordable housing development as well. And then let's see here. A couple other interesting pieces from the housing section. Hochul wants to increase the number of land banks in the state from 35 to 45. So that's almost a 33% increase. Land banks, for those who are unfamiliar, are sort of quasi-public-private organizations that acquire and redevelop blighted and abandoned properties, and then they usually either lease or sell them at below market rates to qualifying buyers or tenants. Another thing that I think is pretty interesting is the budget would add $25 million additional dollars to the Homeless Housing and Assistance Program, which provides funding to create more affordable and supportive housing, particularly for housing insecure people.
You know, I felt like the Governor Hochul, you know, she touched on housing in the state of the state. And of course, that's just the way the state is. You don't get into a lot of details, but she did like a little bit of that. It seemed like she wasn't hitting it as hard as she did 2 years ago. But it looks like they're moving forward. She is still making this a priority and has a lot of options here to pursue what's still a serious housing situation in the state.
For sure. Yeah, I would say it's more, it seems like it's more targeted and perhaps more, the policy initiative is more achievable this time around. It's definitely not the top line sort of headline item from the budget like it was a couple of years ago. I would say that item is probably the $4.5 billion to fund child care services across the state, which would include universal pre-K and financial support for new preschool programs in New York City for 2 and 3 year olds. And then she's also proposing to create a child care pilot program in certain counties. You know, we got kind of a preview of this, not only in the state of the state, but in the in an announcement from New York City Mayor Zohran Mamdani. Universal child care was one of the main main issues that he ran on. And, you know, like in his first week in office, he announced that he had reached an agreement with the governor to fund that. And, of course, that's going to be part of the state's budget, and it's going to serve a little bit as a model, I think, for how universal child care might look in other parts of the state.
Right. And like I said, that really was the headline. The theme of the Her State of the State last year was something like, you know, fighting for your family. And then her theme this year was like, you know, my fight for your family. It was like basically the same theme, but then personalized, which, you know, in my analysis also just reflects the fact that she's in a reelection race this year. And it was trying to be more visible. That's part of what we're talking about. It's like, what is actually being proposed in the budget? But I'm also looking at the political implications and how she's approaching this. And the fact that there's nuts and bolts things, I'd say more targeted, I'd say perhaps a subtle approach to housing rather than saying, here's this big radical thing I want to do. And, you know, maybe that'll help politically get more done there. But the stuff for families, child care, and then also safety. A lot of safety initiatives had less to do specifically with policing, as in past years, that's really something she wanted to make a lot of noise about, especially trying to overcome the strife over the bail reform law and appear, you know, more tough on crime. A lot of her safety stuff also went back to, what are we doing for the children? How are we keeping young people safe online is some of the things she's looking at there.
Yeah, there's a lot of funding for what you might call sort of preventative safety stuff. So there is a $4.5 million allocation to expand crime analysis centers statewide and establish a new one in Westchester County, $6.7 million to go to forensic analysis labs, which I guess is not exactly preventative, but more kind of like nuts and bolts, public safety and law enforcement work, and then extending things that are already in place, such as an allocation to increase the police presence on subway platforms and train stations, primarily in New York City, of course. An additional $535 million to extend the deployment of National Guard troops, who are filling in state prisons in some cases due to the ongoing staffing crisis, there.
Are there any other things that stand out in this budget proposal to you?
You know, one thing that really caught my attention, I think, is that, this isn't part of the proposal necessarily. I mean, this is one of those items that's just going to be in there no matter what. But the state funded Medicaid spending is projected to reach $38.7 billion, which is more than triple what it was in 2011. We've talked a lot about, you know, cost of living and particularly rising healthcare costs, but that just kind of blew my mind. I know 2011 is 15 years in the past now, but triple the amount of spending is pretty wild, and there's not much you can do with that number. And then, you know, I thought the other thing that was sort of interesting, to kind of circling back to your point about her sort of political positioning, is Hochul's in an interesting spot here. Like, she has clearly, I think, tried to draft off some of the positive feelings that Mamdani's campaign generated in New York City. And, you know, came around on this childcare thing like pretty quickly. And I think is trying to position herself as a bit more, you know, friendly to progressives than she has been in the past, maybe sensing the way the political winds are blowing. Also, you know, it's going to be a midterm election where Democrats are expected to do pretty well. But of course, she also needs to be seen as able to actually deliver on things as well, because that's been a big criticism of her governorship, is that she isn't actually all that effective at getting her agenda across the line. The criticism that has come in about her budget proposal, particularly from her Republican challenger, Nassau County Executive Bruce Blakeman, said that this doubles down. He said, quote, the plan doubles down on policies that have made New York unaffordable by pouring billions into migrant services while leaving families, seniors, and hardworking New Yorkers with higher bills. And the migrant services point is that the budget allocates some $4 billion to continue funding migrant shelters, healthcare, and legal services for immigrants to this state. So, you know, the Republican challenger is definitely still trying to hit some of those themes about cost of living and the, you know, the so-called migrant crisis.
Yeah, the governor is always kind of doing this political dance, this balance, where it's a Democratic-led state, and she has to do something for the progressives. At the same time, she is herself an upstate Western New York, you know, solid moderate. So she understands about red upstate New York and those concerns as well. She's always been trying to balance. I think one of the questions, after you put it that way there at the end, an additional question I have as we go through this process is she starting to thread that needle better? After now having done this a number of times, heading into this re-election, is she getting better at that governing side of it, of bringing people along? Another question I have is, what will emerge as the Republican narrative? Because I feel like when I'm hearing from Republicans who are, you know, largely out of power when it comes to state governance, it seems like they're putting a lot of effort in tying her closer to Mamdani and progressive initiatives that they would categorize as going too far, raising the specter of socialism. And I don't feel like they've really coalesced on a strong message, even though they're trying to hit that hard. So that's something else I will be watching for in this process, is where do the Republicans land on their messaging?
Yeah, I'll be curious to see that as well, because certainly the Republican talking point against Mamdani was like, you know, here's the socialist who's going to ruin New York City. And I think that's really quieted down after he had that kind of chummy meet and greet with Trump in the White House a few weeks ago. And so I think it's left, it's opened the lane a little bit, I think, for moderates like Hochul to cozy up to Mamdani without being criticized as being socialist. I would be pretty surprised if one of the main attack lines is not about cost of living. You know, costs continue to go up here. And, you know, the budget does not propose raising personal income or corporate tax rates, but, you know, it is a slight increase in spending overall. As to your first question about, is Hochul getting better at that balance? I mean, to me, it's like I'm not a State House reporter, so I'm not watching everything that she's doing, but it does seem like she's a little more comfortable in her own skin. Lately, you know, the rubber will meet the road, though, in terms of during the next couple of months of negotiations with the legislature and how much of this of her policy initiative she's is able to push through. You know, I think it seems like last year the sharks were really circling in the water for her, and that doesn't seem to be quite the same now. But it's also worth noting she is facing what might be a decent challenge from her left in the form of Antonio Delgado.
A challenge not only when I've been, the primary challenge, what I say is, like, it's not just from within her own party, it's from within her own administration.
Yeah. Would love to be a fly on the wall of, I was going to say I'd love to be a fly on the wall of whatever rooms they're in, but I'm not sure they're spending that much time together these days.
It does not seem that way. The lieutenant governor was not at the State of the State address. But again, just to remind listeners where we are with this, what we're talking about, I always say the governor's proposed budget. This is what is technically called the executive budget. Of course, the legislature, the Assembly and Senate will work on the process of coming up with their own proposals, and then all these things get married together by what we famously have been told ends up being three people in one room.
Yeah, and it's worth noting real quick that the budget proposal does anticipate a decrease of about $10 billion in federal funding to the state. So it is factoring that into the sauce here a little bit more than last year, certainly.
We're talking to Philip Pantuso, Times Union, Hudson Valley. And Philip, you have a story that there's an environmental impact statement involving a plan for the Hudson Highlands Fjord Trail. I will admit, I didn't know there was a Hudson Highlands Fjord. I didn't know we had a fjord.
I'm actually not sure why they call it the Fjord Trail. I think technically that area is a fjord. unrelated, but like we had an article that published maybe 2 years or so ago now by our history writer who looked at how the sort of the retreating glacier in the last ice age that carved out the Hudson Valley. So maybe that area is technically a fjord,
right,
geologically speaking. But this is a proposal that we've done a lot of reporting on over the years. It's sort of been in the public for about 2 or 3 years now, to create a trail that would be called the Hudson Highlands Fjord Trail that basically links Beacon and Cold Spring, two of the more popular tourist towns along the Hudson River on the Metro North Line in the Hudson Highlands. And there's been a lot of discussion about this because part of the point of creating this new trail and the kind of various offshoots of it would be to mitigate the impacts that the droves of tourists who already come and hike in the Highlands are having on the environment. But the project itself would have adverse effects on the environment, at least in the short term. So top line here is that the project would create a 7.5-mile main path along the river and then another 5 or so miles of trail connections and meanders, as well as 2 new parking areas, restroom buildings, and a maintenance facility. And in part, there would be like a section of elevated boardwalk that would run over the Hudson River, not like east to west, but over portions of it where the river's banks are sort of wobbly. There was a draft environmental impact statement that was released in December of 2024, and the public commented on it until March. And then the final environmental impact statement from the State Parks Office just came out. And the kind of main takeaway, it's 1,000+ pages, but the main takeaway is that there will be some impacts from this proposal that cannot be mitigated, but nevertheless, it essentially approved the plan as written. And I can talk about what those impacts would be if you're interested.
Yeah. And if there's been any reaction to this yet, too. Yeah.
Yeah. So the unavoidable potential adverse impacts would include some disturbance of federally regulated wetlands, the temporary loss of aquatic habitat, including for the endangered Atlantic sturgeon, temporary just during the multi-year construction phase, and sediment disturbance in the Hudson River and Fishkill Creek, also during construction. There are also some longer-term impacts identified in the report, which include the construction of up to 23 acres of impervious surfaces and the potential permanent disturbance of 54 acres of natural habitats, among others. So the reaction, the group that is promoting this this project, they're called the Hudson Highlands Fjord Trail, like LLC or something, said like, great, this is essentially a sign off on the plan. The negative reaction has mostly come from some environmental groups, especially Riverkeeper, which in its comments said that it agreed in theory with the notion of expanding public access to nature, but had issues with several elements of the plan, including that elevated boardwalk and a bridge that would cross over Fishkill Creek. Riverkeeper instead thinks the trail should be constructed further inland, so not along the river, which would allow it to make use of an existing bridge, and that they build the whole project with no impervious surfaces. So these are things like, like concrete, where water is not going to be able to flow back down into the ground. There's a lot else in here. I'll let people read the story who are interested, but it is a major sort of milestone achieved for what's going to be like a big environmental project over the next couple of years in our region.
All right. Well, and finally, before we go, and actually here behind the scenes at Radio Catskill, we were looking at the schedule up at the Bearsville Theater in Woodstock in the Catskills. I see North Mississippi All-Stars are coming in February. Tony Levin's Stick Men are often there, coming back in March. They might be Giants going to be there in April. Now, Philip, I can occasionally scrape together enough money, $50, $100 for a ticket or two to one of these shows. But I'm not able to scrape together $8 million for the Bearsville Theater. And would you like to explain to people why I might want to, though?
Yeah. So this week, this actually might have happened last week at this point, but Bearsville Theater and actually the entire Bearsville complex, they're right outside of Woodstock, is now for sale for $7.9 million, if you can get there, for the whole complex. And as you noted, the heart of the complex is the Bearsville Theater, which was envisioned by the late Albert Grossman, who was, Woodstock impresario. He managed Bob Dylan most famously. And the theater itself has hosted many, many luminaries over the years. Graham Nash, the recently passed Bob Weir, the Grateful Dead, Todd Rundgren, just last year, I think that was, or maybe 2 years ago. But the complex also includes Utopia Studios, Bearsville, and a number of restaurants, buildings, and other parkland. It is owned and has been owned since 2019 by the British entrepreneur and philanthropist Lizzie Vann, who we haven't gotten an interview with her, but she did tell the hyperlocal news site Overlook News that she basically feels like her job with the center is done. When she bought it, it needed some repairs. She said she's invested about $6.5 million in renovation and infrastructure upgrades. And she also noted, and this is something we've reported as well, that the sale, were it to occur, is not going to impact any of the tenants there, including the theater. So things are booked through June. I talked to the talent booker there, and he said that there's not going to be any disruption. So the show will go on at Bearsville.
Yeah, the promoter Peter Shapiro took over the booking for the theater, and I think that's what the public may have noticed more than the physical changes there was, just how solid the lineup of acts that they've been getting over the past 5 years has been. So that's an important thing to note, that the management of the theater isn't going to change. This is just it's the whole complex is up for sale. And Philip, I just want to mention that Utopia Studios was right there, right in the theater complex, as you said. I don't think people realize how many amazing artists recorded at that theater or at that studio. Just this past year, I learned Bjork was there, and they recorded parts of the Last Sugar Cubes album in Woodstock, if you can believe
it. Yeah, it's really amazing. Yeah. There's plenty more you can find about that, both in our own reporting and just by Googling it. But yeah, it's quite quite an important facility in the history of rock and pop music in this country.
All right. And those articles and all the past articles are all up at timesunion.com. We've been talking to Philip Pantuso, Times Union, Hudson Valley. Philip, thank you again.
You got it. Take care.
Well, thank you for being here with me tonight. I'm Jason Dole, and that's it for the local edition. Patricio Rabai will be here with you tomorrow for the local edition. And if you haven't heard, we are facing a major winter storm this weekend. So be listening to both Radio Catskill with Tim Bruno tomorrow morning at 10 and the local edition tomorrow evening for the latest on the storm. And be listening for updates all weekend long right here on Radio Catskill. Coming up at 7, you got 2 hours of phenomenal music mixed live and in person by Andy Carlson on Ramble Tamble. Before that, we've got more news from The Daily. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
Support comes from the Chatwal Lodge, nestled in the secluded Chapin Estate in White Lake. Now featuring an expanded dining program and accepting dinner reservations from the public. Information at thechatwalllodge.com. and from listeners like you.
Take a dive into the deep end, the ultimate rock music journey. Deep cuts, live tracks, and rare gems from rock, psychedelia, country, jazz, and blues. Experience the deep cuts on the deep end. Friday nights at 10, only on Radio.